Welcome to the Uncivilized Podcast. My name is Trevor Boehm and I will be your host. Every week or so, I try to get myself a fascinating human on the mic for you, someone who looks at the civilized world just like you do and says no thank you. Someone who wants to break some rules, to lead, and to bring their unique vision into the world. Someone for whom the status quo simply will not do. I hope you enjoy these conversations as much as I do. Please dive in. Eric, welcome to the Uncivilized Podcast, brother. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Trevor.
My pleasure. Just for people who don't know you, don't know where you are, don't know your, I know it's such an American thing, but like, can you give us your 1 minute pitch or your 1 minute, like, who the hell are you?
Yeah. Thankfully Clubhouse has forced me to refine this. So that's good. So my name's Eric Sue and I help level up the world through marketing. And I have a couple marketing businesses, ad agency, a software company. I also invest in a lot of MarTech software companies. And other than that, I have a podcast called Leveling Up. For obvious reasons, there's a book coming out here too, Leveling Up. And then I have another one called Marketing School, which I do with someone else, another marketer named Neil Patel.
Gotcha. I love the very first line of your book. This is where I knew. I was like, okay, cool. I don't know you very well. Like, this is going to be a great interview. And you're like, I was a disappointment to my parents. Tell me a little bit about, walk me through a bit of how you go from being a young person to being a gamer to being someone who's now helping people through gaming.
Yeah. So I would just want to preface this by saying, you know, I'm still very much, you know, I feel like I'm just starting every single day, right? So I don't want to make it seem like I made it, because the moment you feel like you made it, that's when you start to get complacent, at least for myself. So, I mean, going on that first sentence, I was the ultimate failure. I mean, I almost didn't graduate high school because I didn't want to go to this one class my senior year. It was a politics class. I didn't even care, right? Right. And then I didn't go to class my first year of college. So I had 6 withdrawals and 2 Fs, I think. I played a lot of World of Warcraft and poker instead because that's what I wanted to do. Yeah. And I actually got fired from 2 jobs. One job was because it was raining. I didn't feel like going to work. And then the other one was actually for legit reasons. They found out that I was trying to start not a competing business, but a side hustle. One of the leads reached out to the company and they fired me. And that's actually when I started to get really motivated and started to go off and do my own thing. But okay. That's largely, those are all the failures. I actually forgot the original question, but
yeah. what initially turned you on to gaming? Because I think gaming is a big part of what you're teaching or the principles underneath it. Yeah. I stopped playing, you know, I think I got to like 5th, 6th grade and was like, I want a skateboard.
Yeah.
But so walk me through, like, because gaming's now a thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's a thing, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, by the way, I mean, you know, when you skateboarded, you did it with your friends, right?
Yeah.
What did you learn from it?
Oh, Lord. I mean, I learned that like my shins get bloody. You know what I learned was like to learn a new trick, it may take 1,000 failures. And half of those failures were going to be physical pain.
Dude.
And perfect. When I got it, it was like I remember doing a kickflip for the first time. Yeah. I can tell you it was probably like 38 years ago, but I know exactly where I was when I landed that first kickflip.
That's amazing. Okay. So similar to that, right? I think, by the way, my ultimate game now is business. I think it's the ultimate game and, you know, playing the game of life. I cannot play games anymore because I see it as a shadow world. So I'm going in there. I'm going to train. I'm going to get better at communication. I'm going to get better at teamwork. I'm going to get better at my resilience is going to improve as well. And then repetition happens a lot from gaming as well. To your point, you know, you had to practice that kickflip 1,000 times to get it right. Same thing with practicing your basketball shot, all these things. Well, when I'm playing first-person shooters back when I was 8 years old, all the way up to maybe 22 years old, you know, you have to react quickly. So my twitch muscles are faster. I type a lot faster because back in the day, we couldn't communicate over the mic. So at my high point, I can type up to 144 words per minute. That's all from gaming, right? I talk fast because I just react fast to things. And so I've also learned how to, again, like at 12 years old, I was winning championships because I constantly was iterating every day. And also I learned how to copy other people too, right? So there's so many lessons I got from that. And to me, I just talked about training in the shadow world. When you're playing sports, if you overtrain, you might tear your ACL. You might, you know, twist something, right? It's the same type of concept. It's just, there's a stigma tied to it. And like any new toy, you know, Bitcoin was dismissed as a toy initially. Look at it now, right? Mm-hmm. Who knows what's going to happen with it long-term, but look at it now. Esports dismissed. And also Snapchat was dismissed. And now they're $95 billion market cap. So I'm just saying all these things become inevitable and people will have to accept it. My mission here, my life mission is to level up the world. And there's right now, we have 3 billion people in the world that have at least played a game. So it doesn't matter if you play like Tetris or Duck Hunt, like you've played a game and you need to understand that you can make a bigger impact on the world than you think you can.
Can you define for me, like, what do you mean by level up the world? Like, what does that mean to you?
Yeah. So if you were to strip me to my core, if I had none of my businesses, nothing right now, I just love learning and I just love teaching. What we've been able to build so far, let's use our podcast as an example, Marketing School. That one gets about 1.5 million downloads a month, but it took time to compound to get there. So you slowly, every single day, you're getting a little better every single day, 1%. Sometimes there are setbacks, whatever, but the setbacks aren't good or bad. It's just, it is what it is. And you have to figure it out or else you don't deserve to get to the next level. And so it's called leveling up, not level up, because level up is just one level. Leveling up is you're consistently doing it, right? It's a passive thing that you're doing. And it's basically your growth rate every single day. And you're going to keep playing that game until you die.
What do you say are the fundamental, like if you had to break down, if we took everything away, but I was like, okay, you can only give me three principles of this. What would be the first three things you'd say?
Yeah. I mean, first, think in decades, right? I have this Pokemon card in front of me right now. I got this from this guy that used to work for me. He now works for Gary Vee. He was DMing me the other day. Hey, you want to buy this? $2,000, right? So he's like, okay, Eric, are you an idiot? You just paid $2,000 for this cardboard, right? But you know, the argument here is you have to think in decades. You have to think long-term. It's like anything else. We're just too impatient. So that's the first thing, think in decades.
Think in decades.
Yep. The second thing is, it's all about who, not how. And what I mean by that is, you know, I was just speaking to a guy that he runs a nonprofit. He gets it's called a Gamers Outreach, and he gets these gaming consoles to hospitals to help, you know, cheer up the kids, right? Make them happy. And so, you know, if you're trying to grow that or any type of organization, could be nonprofit, profitable, whatever, or for profit, you're looking to do it with the team instead of trying to figure everything out how to do it yourself, which is what I did early. Like, I need to be the best. I need to be the best. Mm-hmm. It's who's actually done it and who can I bring on with me for this journey? Sure. And that's how some of the biggest companies in the world are built. That's fundamental. Yeah. And, you know, the third one I would say is just being long. So we talked about thinking in decades. And then also, I mean, that's really just basically slowing down, but also understanding that, you know, that things take time, and then also that it's okay. It's okay to say no to things, right? And to focus. Because for me, earlier in my career, I tried to do a bunch of different things because I thought I was Superman, right? Mm-hmm. And you realize at the end of the day, even if you're Superman, you're still one man, right? Or woman. And you need more people around you, and you have to stay focused, because the analogy I use in the book is, if you think of success like a sphere and you start out in the middle and success is on all the edges, you can get there if you keep moving in one direction. But if you keep changing directions all the time, you're not going to reach the edges.
Okay. Okay. Brilliant. What do you say to people who go, okay, who, not how, but I don't have any money?
I think great. Right.
Like, great. I love it.
Let me tell you why it's great. So, you know, Asian parents and, you know, tiger mom, I don't know about other types of cultures, but it's a constant beat down. Right. And I learned at a young age.
Dude, it's when I read that first sentence, I was like, his life must have been hell for the first little while.
It's not easy, but then you learn how to reframe it and you're just like, oh, you know what? Whatever mom says, right? Give me more. Give me more pain. Like, as long as you're not hurting me physically, like, give me more pain. Cause that's the prerequisite to success. And poker, which is a game I played in college, I was playing 10 to 14 hours a day. And it really teaches you to be resilient, because you can bring your A game 3 months at a time, 6 months, 12 months at a time. Variance, the math can still catch up with you, and you can lose all 12 months, right? And that forces you into thinking you can either react poorly and scream and complain about it, or you can build resilience and you can learn to reframe any type of pain that comes towards you and say, hey, you know what? That's fuel. That's motivation. Give me more, right? Yeah. And so I have this sick reframe in my mind now. I'm not saying it's sick in a cool way. I'm saying it's kind of twisted, but that's how I deal with it.
I love it. What first attracted you to poker? And was this something you wanted to do professionally? Were you like, okay, this is my way to make money? Or was it just a different way to, it's just from the first 10 minutes of this conversation, your mind works quickly. And I can tell your mind can handle a lot of different thoughts at the same time. So was that what attracted you to poker? Was it competitive? Was it your sport? Talk to me here.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, it's funny. I recommend everyone take this test called the Strengths Finder. It shows you your top five strengths, and take it every 5 years because you're a different person. I had this one strength pop up called competition the last time I took it. It's in my top five. And so to answer your question, in 2003, Chris Moneymaker won the World Series of Poker. Amateur player, I'm sure you might remember. When your last name's Moneymaker, you're probably going to help the industry.
Yeah.
And so I was 17 years old at the time. We were seniors in high school and we had nothing better to do. So we started playing poker. I would just observe. And then eventually I got involved. And, you know, when I got involved, people were, you know, all my friends were talking crap to me. And, you know, you're the worst. Eric's easy money. I just hear all these things. And I'm just like, okay. I'm just going to have to like learn. And then so what ended up happening was, I got very competitive. I loved all the kind of, there's a game within the game there, right? And what I would say is practical. So yeah, I mean, what's practical to the audience is A, I talked about resilience. B, you learn how to think in bets, right? You learn, you kind of learn the odds, you know when to go all in, you know when to kind of, you know, back off. You also learn how to think long-term as well, right? And understand that short-term you can lose, but long-term, if you're a good player, you're going to win out. And yeah, again, you learn how to pick spots, you learn how to look at people too. I actually think whether it's poker or could even be chess, I think that should be a required test at schools, because it forces you how to, you think like kind of like a business person.
Right.
So that's what I learned from it. But to answer your question, going back to college again, or sorry, high school, when I was playing with everyone, eventually I learned how to get better. And I copied a lot of tactics from my friends. And then eventually I started dominating everyone where they didn't want to play anymore. And we stopped playing poker altogether because it wasn't fun, because I'd have all the chips at the end.
Gotcha. Eric, what inspired you to write this book?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the last time I got that question was when I was with this guy, Anthony Pompliano, very popular in crypto. He's like, why write a book? Nobody reads books anymore. And so
I disagree. I read books.
I think to each his own. But, you know, I love it. I mean, you know, I love the physical touch of it, being able to focus. So for me, what really stuck with me was when an author said that, you know, you only really write a book if you have a message. And, you know, as a marketer, I'm not trying to make money or like get on the New York Times, you know, like out the gate. It's a long-term type of thing. And my ultimate goal is for this book to have a Lindy effect, meaning that the Lindy effect means the longer something stays around, let's say it stays for 100 years, it's likely to stay around for another 100 years. So How to Win Friends and Influence People, great book.
Right.
Breakthrough Advertising, great book. These books have been around for over 100 years. Yeah. I think gaming will become, you know, more and more accepted. And I think people need to understand that, look, if you can look at life as a game, you'll be successful. Gaming creates leaders. It creates successful people. Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg. I've seen people I used to look up to winning championships. They, like one guy, he sold like his third startup for a lot of money. And so it's not about money, but it's just talking about, hey, like all of the models you learn from gaming, just like all the models you learn from sports, it can actually help you make an impact in real life. So.
And so you wanted, did you look at the marketing world and say, hey, this doesn't work? Or did you look at the business world and say, there's a problem here? Or was it like, were you trying to fix a problem or just add a new perspective per se?
I think everything about just life in general, we can look up to the most successful people, but what really separates them from the others is just their mindset and how they think about things. And so, you know, I'm constantly trying to get better. I'm trying to get in more information to reframe how I think. So for example, the sick thing I was telling you about earlier where I want more pain. So it's, I think what happens is we're all programmed a certain way, you know, from going into high school, right? We're all taught, hey, we shouldn't fail. We're all taught to be a certain way to become predictable kind of machines. Because in the 40s and 50s after the war, or after the war, so the 50s, we're all taught to kind of, you know, become like these standard kind of family, standard people. This is the American dream. But as we know now, nothing is standard. Inequality is rising. And so we kind of have to all fend for ourselves. And so, I mean, that's kind of the basis around it. Happy to elaborate around any point.
Sure. What are people getting wrong with marketing, in your opinion?
I think you know, when I first started learning marketing, I learned from the world of internet marketers and affiliate marketers. And, you know, this is funny because one guy, an internet marketer, told me a couple of weeks ago, he's like, you know, internet marketers are like the hillbillies of entrepreneurs, right? There's a reason he said that. It's because there's a level of short-termism that it's very tunnel vision to focusing on profit. So it's me, 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 me. Mm-hmm. And when you focus on me, 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 you limit your potential and you don't think about long-term things such as building a great team. And what goes into building a great team is a great culture, right? Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I was able to move into tech. So I can straddle the line between tech and the world of internet marketing. I can take the best from both worlds. But I think, you know, when you switch your mindset into, earlier I talked about thinking in decades, when you think like that, that forces you to think about, okay, so now how do I retain my best talent? How do I incentivize them the best way, right? How do I make sure that I actually care about my people? How can I help them fulfill their dreams, right?
Right.
All these things I thought were baloney, right? When I was in my early 20s.
Yeah.
You get older and you realize it's everything. It's all about culture and communication. It doesn't matter if it's in business or just life in general for your family. It's all about culture and communication.
Eric, how do you define culture for people who are listening to this who may not have as high of a business acumen as you do? How do you define it, and why is it more important to you than, say, my marketing strategy or my Facebook ads or all of the things that people actually do get caught up on?
Yeah. You know, you bring up a good point. So my podcast, Marketing School, is every single day, and all the people love is, because it's only 5 minutes, they love the tactics. Give me more tactics, right?
Yeah.
When I'm in Clubhouse, give me more tactics, right? But then you realize all that doesn't really mean much because there's always going to be more tactics, right? The most important thing is, when I talk about culture is your operating system. It's how you behave. It's how your company is. If you are, as a leader, you're the one that's constantly late to meetings, you're distracted during meetings, you're looking at other stuff, the rest of your team will behave that way. So culture stems from the top. And so it's really important to get that right. And it's a very pie in the sky type of concept.
Right.
When I was about 23, I read this book called Delivering Happiness from the late Tony Hsieh. It's all about Zappos culture. And I didn't really get it at the time. I was like, okay, I'm just going to focus on tactics. That's what matters. And that's what most people would say. But that's why most people are most people, because most people don't think enough about, you know, when we think about Glassdoor, let's look at the top companies. Zoom has great culture. Their CEO won, right? Mm-hmm. And Google, you think about Facebook, and they're the biggest companies in the world, but they obsess, the top CEOs in the world, they all obsess over this pie in the sky word known as culture.
Mm. What do you say to people who don't have a team, who, like, the solopreneur who is listening to this and is like, cool, my culture is great. It's me. I'm excited to be here. What do you recommend when solopreneurs call in and ask you about this stuff?
I think, so, like, when we talk about leveling up, there's levels you can keep getting stronger and stronger, but you don't have to. Like, if you don't want to go beyond solopreneur, that's totally fine. If you don't want to build a team, you're happy where you're at, it's a great lifestyle, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. So that's what I would say. But if they wanted to build a great culture, a great team, I think it's, you know, utilizing resources such as Traction, which is the entrepreneur's operating system. There's another book called Rocket Fuel, but also, again, going back to Tony Hsieh's things, looking at the top cultures, you know, checking out how these people are behaving, right? You can go to Y Combinator's startup school on YouTube, watch some videos there, and you'll see the Airbnb for free, the Airbnb CEO talking about what culture actually means, because it's hard to grasp. But, you know, once you know that you have a good culture going on. So
I guess that is a good way to put it, huh? Like, you'll feel it. It's like people want to work with you. People want to do extra stuff on your behalf. People take ownership of the company, even though they may not be full time. What would you say is the key ingredient? I know I'm just like, I feel like I'm peppering you with questions, but we'll keep going on. What is the key ingredient to creating a great culture?
So, I mean, this is another pie in the sky concept again, core values, right? When people used to tell me about core, I'm like, I just rolled my eyes, like, come on, like, give me some tactics, right?
I want to make money here. I don't give a fuck about core values.
Yeah, make money, right? Yeah. So, like, for me, so my core values, the core values we have at one of our companies is growth is the number one core value. Because at my core, I just love learning. I love teaching. So we have growth. Long-term vision is another one. We have integrity, right. We have tenacity, accountability, and creativity, right? And it took us, by the way, when we put these core values together, it took us 3 hours to do it because we wrote all these words. I was like, guys, we got kind of our leadership team together and was like, guys, okay, what are all the words that define us, right? So we started writing everything. I think we had, you know, hundreds of words, right? And then we slowly distilled it down to these 6 words. And it took time to do it. Culture isn't about, you know, going when we talk about core values, it's not about going to one website and pulling from them, because that's what I did. I went to Zappos website. Oh, this one sounds good. Yeah, we'll do this one too and this one too. Yeah. And then like, it's not really you, right? Mm. So the core values first, and that makes everything easier. Because when you think about hiring and firing, it's just like, oh yeah, this person, yeah. Because Eric, you didn't show up to this meeting on time and then you didn't deliver this, you promised you would. And then this other thing over here, it tells me that you're not accountable. So I'm going to have to give you a warning, unfortunately. We can't have this continue, right? Sure. And then boom, it just makes it easy. People know. And then people also will respect you for making decisions based on the core values.
Mm, I appreciate that, man. I had a early business coach who went through this exact same stuff. And I remember thinking like, I'm fucking paying you a lot of money. Yeah. I don't care about any of this shit.
Yeah.
And yet now with a company that the people say, I love working with you and I love this mission. Then yeah. I know his seeds were actually true.
Yeah.
Eric's a genius, but let's take a break here. I really want to tell you guys about the Uncivilized Nation. This is my membership group for men only. This is the group that now has live meetings in over a dozen places all over the world with the Uncivilized teams. This is where men come to uplevel themselves. This is where men come to get support, to share about things they can't share elsewhere. This group is so phenomenal, and it's something that when I started, I had no idea the power of. But every month we are getting together multiple times to share our struggles, to share our successes, and to support each other. If you are a man, you need to be in this group. I'll say that again. If you are a man, you need to be in this group. www.manuncivilized.com/the nation. Come check us out. All right, back to Eric. Tell me about starting a podcast and why delivering only 5 minutes. You said each episode is only 5 minutes.
Yeah. So I want to come back to that. I mean, sure. Real quick on the, sure. I think the core values are important, but you got to have a mission too. Right.
Okay.
And then there's also something called the vivid vision. I would recommend people Google that. That's okay. A 3-year plan. You basically write out like, so for example, 3 years ago, I wrote that, you know, we'll have an office, 2 stories with kombucha on tap, right? That's the only thing that we're actually not going to get this year. Everything else, all the numbers I spec'd out, the people we're going to hire, that's all happened. So, that's good for the team to see. You send them that. It's like, guys, this is a document. This is where we're going. And we basically called our shot. And then we said, okay, this is what's going to happen. Mm. The mission, going back to my overall mission, is to level up the world. And the reason it's so big is because that's what a mission is. It's supposed to be unachievable, right? So I can wake up every day knowing I could just keep getting a little closer to it. Right. But for, you know, the marketing businesses that we have, it's to level up the world through marketing, right? Which is what I used earlier. But my personal mission is just to level up the world.
Okay.
So anyway, the podcast.
Actually, let's go back to the podcast in a sec. Leveling up the world through marketing. Why through marketing and not through health, through communication, through some other means? Why through marketing?
Yep. So for myself, it's just to level up the world. So it could be really anything. That's how broad it is. But for the company, through marketing means, so when I said that to them, their eyes lit up, right? Mm. They're like, oh, okay, I get it. Because everything we have, whether it's our audiences or the products or services that we have, it's all around marketing, right? It's just, it's what we know.
Okay. I haven't forgotten the podcast question. It's going to come back. Mm-hmm. What does marketing mean to you?
Yeah. Great question. Marketing to me, it's just it's my medium. It's my vessel that I use to teach, right? So when I think about everything that I spend a lot of time reading every day, whether it could be new marketing stuff, but a lot of it's around business and investing. Yeah. And it's what I'm known for. And it's the path of least resistance right now to build upon, right? Because again, if I use this, the success analogy to sphere again, I can't move all over the place, right? I have a lot of assets built up already that makes it easier for me to just blow up versus like having to start from scratch somewhere else.
Sure. Sure. So you just said that marketing to you is teaching. So I think when most people hear it, they hear marketing is sale. Marketing is like, and I'm gonna talk about like a more negative view. It's like, great, there's the fucking spam email. Great. Yep. Here's the series of ways you're trying to manipulate me to get me to buy this thing. Here's the hook. Here's how you're dismissing my negative thoughts. Here's how you're painting the picture of the future. Talk me through how you use it for teaching.
Yeah. So perfect. I teach at, you know, back pre-COVID, I over here in LA, I would teach at USC and Pepperdine, you know, once a quarter. And right. I do that for free. I'm not trying to make money off of it. It's not a really big audience or anything. I just love doing that. And so the only way that I've been, the reason we've been able to rebuild everything. So I bought the company for $2, failing company, was because we're able to build audiences. So
hold tight. You bought a company for $2.
Yes.
Please tell before, so everyone's not like, wait a minute. Walk me through that. And then I'm sorry I cut you off. But how the hell did you buy a company for $2? I can't get a cup of coffee at Starbucks for $2.
So Single Grain, which is the ad agency that I own 100% of now, I came in, I was brought in to help quote unquote save the company because my last, the startup I was at previously, I was able to help turn it around. Mm-hmm. We had a great product, a great team. So the challenge with this company, Single Grain, was the SEO work that was doing. So it was an SEO agency. The Google algorithms updates hit. And so everything that the company was doing became invalid overnight.
Right.
And they're like, okay, Eric, try to help save this, right? And 6 months into it, the four partners decided that they wanted out. And Neil Patel, my podcast co-host, was one of the partners. And he's like, hey, as a friend, you should get out. There's no brand equity. There's nothing. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, let's think about this from like a poker perspective. Well, this is an asymmetric bet because if I win, I'm gonna have unlimited upside. If I lose, my downside's capped because I negotiated a deal where I would owe nothing if the company failed. So at worst, it's an MBA, right? Mm-hmm. And heads, I win a lot. Tails, I kind of still win.
Yeah.
So to me, that was the bet. And so that's how I negotiated a deal where I bought Neil's shares for $1 for 10%, another partner's $1 for 10%. The rest was seller financed. So that's how I got the company.
Oh, okay. That makes a little more sense. Sorry, do you remember the sentence you were going to say before I stopped you? We were talking about teaching. You were saying you taught at Pepperdine, you taught at USC, and you didn't do it to make money.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. So we're talking about how we were able to build everything back up. So when I took the company over, I made it go from bad to worse. What happened? Well, I read this book called Let My People Go Surfing from the
I have it. It's on my shelf. I have that book. Yeah.
Great book, right?
Yeah.
But 27-year-old me took it so literally. I was like, yeah, let my people go surfing. Yeah. I stopped showing up to the office, right? Let my people go surfing. I was like, they don't want to be micromanaged, whatever. So I had no vision, no mission, whatever, no culture. So that's why all that stuff is important to me now, because everything fell apart. And so it got so bad to the point where my bookkeeping firm called me and said, hey, it might be time to shut it down. And I had actually accepted a job, a really good paying job, up to like seven figures. And I said yes. And the next day I was like, guys, I can't do it. I was like, I need to continue on, right?
Yeah.
But there's nothing to go off of. And then I continued on. Luckily, we started to build the audience, right? So we started the podcast. We started to do SEO on our blog. Mm. And so the reason I talk about teaching, why marketing is teaching, because it's really what saved the company. Mm. We slowly compounded our podcast, leveling up. The first year, we were only getting 9 downloads a day. Mm-hmm. And I was spending 6 hours a week on it. The second year, we're only getting 30 downloads a day. But if we didn't continue on, we wouldn't be where we are today. We're cumulatively with the two podcasts, we're at 50 million downloads, right?
That's insane. Where was the jump? Like, where did, because you're like 9, 30 millions. What, and where was the jump and what happened to make the jump?
Yeah. So one big piece of it was Product Hunt at the time, which is kind of like a product review site. They had a podcast section and we would post our podcast there every day. And mm-hmm. So it started to compound from there because we're at number one and number two every single day. We kind of gamed it.
Gotcha.
And so that helped a lot. And then more and more people started to share it. So it started to compound. That was for the Leveling Up podcast. Mm-hmm. And so that one got to about 100,000 downloads a month. Obviously, wow. We still do it. Right. And then with the Marketing School podcast, we started that one 4 years ago. That one out the gate just did really well. I mean, 100,000 the first one, 300,000, 500,000. Wow. We hit our email list first. And okay. then after the first 2 months, we didn't, it was like, it's kind of like when you're like riding a bike, your parents are like pushing you and then you look back and they're not pushing you anymore.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what it was. So that's what happened with podcasting. At the same time, we were rebuilding our blog. When I first took over the company, we're getting 3,000 visits a month. Same compounding story. It took us, you know, right now we're about 350,000 visits a month, which is not the biggest, but it's great now. Mm-hmm. And so my point of saying all this is that we just kept teaching. I am not conditioned. Like even we're doing this book promo right now. Like when I don't like to ask so much, right? It's just like, you make so much deposits into the relationship bank where people just want to offer you stuff.
Sure.
And so that's what works for me. I'm not saying it's for everyone, but for me, I just enjoy learning and teaching. And I find that when I teach in public, an audience gathers and then I can build a community around that.
I love it. How do you view the difference in your marketing compared to, I'm just going to say in quotes, like standard marketing?
Yeah. So we'll use Clubhouse again.
Okay.
When I'm in Clubhouse in a lot of these marketing rooms, it's a lot of the people that I'm talking about that have the short-term thinking. It's like, hey, you know, we're going to try to sell you on this stage and we're going to talk to you really aggressively and force you into our funnel. And we're going to talk down to you as well. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you need me more than I need you, right? That's right, the stuff I hear. And I'm just like, dude, that's such a turnoff. But for me, it's just like, how can I continue to genuinely be helpful? Mm-hmm. And so that's the difference. That's a dichotomy over there. And so when you do that, you'll certainly get transactions, but you're not going to build. I think the standard marketers are very good at driving. Let's just use the word internet marketers.
Sure.
They're very good at acquisition.
Mm.
They're historically poor at retention.
Right.
But when you look at, let's say people in Silicon Valley, okay, they might not be that good at acquisition. You know, they'll say demand generation, but they really just mean paid ads. So demand generation, but they're exceptional when it comes to customer development, when it comes to retention, mm-hmm. when it comes to that type of stuff where you actually get to get people to stay for the long term and the recurring value and the lifetime value of a customer builds.
Okay. So you're really, it's you're just offering and offering and offering and offering, and then people want to hang out with you and then they want to spend time in your ecosystem. They want to be around you. And while they're around you, they end up spending money with you. They end up purchasing things from you.
Yeah. I think it just becomes like I think it's like a type of thing where you shoot for the stars in terms of all the things that you're teaching. You give. And then like your results are still going to be exceptional because you can shoot for the stars and land on the moon in terms of results. Right. Cause it's just like, it's a residual effect. Right. You know, the because of the value that you give. And so, you know, I'm looking at this book right now. It took me freaking 6 years to do this thing. Like, what is my incentive for doing this? Am I trying to make a lot of money, get on the New York Times? Right. No, I know for a fact, because I've done this over and over, that if I teach, and this time I'm teaching to a really big audience, I'm pretty sure I'm going to build a new community.
Right. And anybody who's written a book and sold books, I'll raise my hand, knows you're not getting rich selling a book, right? 6 years of your life. And how much do you make per book? I imagine it's under $10 per book.
I think it's like $5.
Yeah, it's like $5, right? And it was like years of your blood, sweat, and tears. But you're right. People will start gathering around it. Eric, what's your thought on it feels like traditional social media is kind of under the gun. So I didn't grow up with, but my first social media experience was Facebook. Now I'm not even on it. I remember a time being like, holy shit, this is everything. This is, if you're not on this, you're missing out on being invited to parties, to knowing cultural events, to like everything. And now it seems to be gone. People have switched over to Instagram, and now it almost feels like Instagram's going to be gone and people are switching over to Clubhouse. What's your thought on kind of the directionality of tech? And why do we outgrow these platforms so quickly?
I think people continually want the new thing. And so it's like, what's novel, what's new? And so, you know, audio is now new. So you see Clubhouse and Twitter Spaces out, and then Facebook is coming out with a competitor now too.
Yeah.
Same thing, by the way, let's go back to Snap Stories, right? And then Instagram copies, and everyone has stories now. Right. Same thing with TikTok, okay? TikTok, now you have Instagram Reels, you have Snapchat, Spotlight, and then you have YouTube Shorts, which is their competitor, right? Mm. So it's whatever's new, everyone copies it, and then that's it, right? I think that's the game now with social. So I don't think it's ever going to really change. Like we've seen it happen over and over. Like you mentioned, Facebook and then Instagram, right? And I think YouTube came before Facebook or at the same time.
Yeah.
But that's what it is. But actually, I should come back to this.
Sure.
YouTube is actually still compounding quite a bit. Where quarter over quarter growth is like 10 to 15%, no matter how big your channel is.
Oh, wow. What's your thought on people? And we're going to talk about this strictly from a business sense, not like I want to hang out and see what my my cousins are doing, of dumping energy, time, building a following into a platform, knowing that within 3 or 4 years, that platform may be irrelevant.
I mean, I love it. So the reason why I love it, because it's like, it teaches you to think on your toes. And I mean, as a marketer, I would just say, look, you have to own your audience. So whether it's you're driving people to an email list or driving people to an SMS list where you can kind of control that more. I think the world we're going into now with the iOS 14 updates, you know, tracking being removed, all that type of stuff is we just understand that, you know, you can't trust. The only person you can trust is really yourself. So you have to own as much as you can and then leverage these platforms. Like the reason everyone's flocking to Clubhouse right now is because the organic reach is so strong. Yesterday, I was in a room with Kevin O'Leary and Howard Marks, and we're up on stage and 1,600 people joined the room. Right. And but like if you're paying for that on Facebook ads, I think you'd be paying like $20,000 to $24,000 in ad spend just to get those people into a room.
Wow. Walk me through, just if you would, and for people who are new to Clubhouse, give me like a 2-minute synopsis on Clubhouse and why you like it as opposed to, or do you like it more so than say something like Instagram?
I mean, I love it because, I mean, so first Clubhouse is a audio social network where it's basically audio chat rooms and then you can chat about whatever. Some of the conversations that I'll listen to, so I don't need to always speak on stage. One time I joined a room where it was Mandarin learners, right? So I was just like, let's see how good my Mandarin is right now. Yeah. So I joined the room. My white friend, who's an entrepreneur, is speaking fluent Mandarin. I'm like, what the fuck is going on, right? So he's speaking perfectly. And I look at all the other people. I was like, okay, everyone else is like yellow people. Okay, perfect, right? They're just like me. But then I start looking at their names. I'm like, oh my God, each and every one of them, they're all Japanese. So it's like all Japanese people and one white guy all speaking fluent Mandarin. So you see wacky stuff like that.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll say is, with this book, because it's really targeting gamers, I'm joining a lot of these esports rooms and I'm getting so much perspective. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I'm networking with the creative marketer at Xbox. Mm-hmm. There's one over here at, you know, Amazon Luna, right? Who used to work at Riot Games. And I get speed networking and there's people that I've known of that now we're doing collaborations on the side. And plus, by the way, I'm on this podcast tour right now. I got booked on 40 podcasts out of 105. From Clubhouse. It's like, if we're saying your network is your net worth, then Clubhouse is everything.
Gotcha. Okay. You know, I've dropped in there a couple times and just, it's the like, you know, it's confusing. It's not, I'm comfortable with Instagram, but yet knowing that like, it is the next space to be moving into. Eric. Yeah.
I hated it first. So I hate it. Yeah. To your point, this is confusing. This is stupid. And it's really nerve wracking if you don't have a following in the beginning. And so it was like the first couple rooms I did with my friends, I was like, guys, I brought in a couple 8-figure entrepreneurs and we're talking some 9-figure entrepreneurs. I was like, guys, we have 8 and 9-figure entrepreneurs. We got like 20 people into the room. It was tough, but then you learn how to make the system work and then you go. But it's like every single social platform, right? Organic reach is strong until it isn't.
Right. Eric, is there a goal for you? I get leveling up is like the overarching mission, but it feels like at your core, you're a builder in addition to being a teacher. Is there something that you're particularly, like one of the questions I ask all the guys that come in and join my movement is, what are you building? Because I feel like it gives men a focus and it also gives them some reason to get up out of bed in the morning and actually do some shit rather than sit around and watch Netflix. Do you have an idea? Like, are you building a conglomeration of companies? Are you building an empire? Are you just going to build and sell? Or are you just one of those guys that's like, I just need something to do every day. So I'm just going to get up and fuck some shit up in this area. And then 5 years from now, I'm going to be fucking some shit up in this area. And you're just going to go.
I think it's a combination of that. So one amazing thing that I just heard actually before this. So when we think about kids, when you look at them and they play games, they're completely focused. But when you take them to school, they're diagnosed with ADD. They can't focus. And then maybe the question is, how interesting is the teacher's content, right? And so if I'm a teacher, my content's got to be interesting. So I'm going to show you this, all the shit that I'm building, right? I'm not going to just be a professional teacher. I'm going to be building stuff. So I'm going to say, hey, look, I'm actually investing. I'm actually building. That's one big piece of it. And so to answer your question, if we think about Berkshire Hathaway, they have a perfect model. It's buy and hold, and largely with the businesses that they have. There's a company in Canada called Tiny Capital. And it started out as a web design firm first, and they take all the profits from that company and they go reinvest it. They go buy other internet businesses, right? It's the Berkshire Hathaway model, basically. I'm trying to do that for the world of kind of marketing businesses, right? Which is why I said marketing businesses. It just seems to make a lot of sense because our audiences will continue to compound around marketing. And then I'll buy whatever makes a lot of sense where I can just plug it in with my audience. So that's kind of, you know, the holding company, right?
Yeah.
Long term though, if we think about marketing school, what I want to be doing is taking people from zero to job ready, actually getting them that job. So having that marketing school component where they don't need to pay anything. And then when they graduate, they pay us 15% of their income for the first 2 years. So it's an income share agreement with a cap of 30K. Oh. And then, by the way, we get so many people hitting us up. They say, we need marketers. Okay, now there's a recruiting play too. We'll get a recruitment fee for placing these people. But zero to all the way up to getting a job, there's going to be a big reskilling that needs to happen soon. Mm-hmm. And traditional colleges will get destroyed. I think the big brand names will be around Yale, Harvard. Those will stay.
Sure.
But this is a big opportunity for a lot of people. So, you know, the thing I'll say is this I'm super excited about because the TAM, the total addressable market, is huge.
Yeah. So you think that traditional education will go away because it's unnecessary or because people will be able to specialize? Like, I won't need to go to 4 years of liberal arts college for 160 grand. I can come through your program and be prepared to be a great marketer. And that will cost me 30 over the course of 2 years. And I'm getting paid during those 2 years. Is that accurate? Correct.
Yeah. So the incentives are now aligned, right? And then, by the way, like if you're taking a free program and you actually get a job, you're going to tell all your friends. So your marketing's there already for the whole thing. Sure. And this concept has been proven with Lambda School. They raised a bunch of money. They teach people how to do web development.
Yeah.
So I think traditional education just needs to be reformed. I think the format that it's in right now, to my point earlier, the content's just boring from kind of traditional education.
Sure.
And this opens up the door for a lot of people. And by the way, the stuff I learned, I do believe you can learn in 12 weeks in a boot camp. You can learn what you need to know. And then after that, you're just practicing, you're failing forward. Right. So that's what I think it is. And again, I think if we talk about inequality, you know, fixing education is a big piece of it.
Yeah, for sure. Do you value that your formal education or do you value even your college education?
No. So I tell my parents this and I'm very grateful that they paid for it. At the end of the day, my mom's about prestige. She wants to tell her Asian friends that, you know, I went to UC San Diego. Look at me. I'm proud. Right. But it did nothing for me. Mm-hmm. I got to hang out with my high school friends a lot more. That's about it. But I don't remember. Like, I'll tell you what all the Asian kids did. We all went to this thing called Econ Tutor, and that guy would basically give us all the answers, and then we basically automatically got B's on the test. And I had a history minor as well, and I just went to Wikipedia the day before, and I just basically, you know, wrote stuff myself. Now you can use tools like copy.ai and just write complete papers for you. So that whole thing's broken.
Right. What do you think needs to happen? I know you're not an educator, but you seem to have a pretty good grasp on things. What do you think needs to happen within formal education, or does it need to get kind of burned to the ground?
I think what would be fascinating is if income share agreements, again, incentives are aligned, but if you add on, okay, here's a buzzword, blockchain, right? Mm-hmm. If you add on the ability to say, okay, let's say, you know, you want your students to do a task for maybe some companies, right? Now you can automatically get those tasks verified. Maybe they're getting tracked in Asana. If this task is complete, you get paid a microtransaction, maybe a couple cents or 25 cents or something like that, right? You can do as many of these tasks as you want. And this is all being recorded on a ledger that everyone can see. And maybe at a certain point, you get certain badges, right? So you're kind of gamifying the education process and being able to track the whole thing and being able to pay people at the same time. And all this is doable now through smart contracts. Right? I think we're getting to that point now, which is why you see Ethereum's basically about to break $2,000.
I love it. I'm not sure what Ethereum is. I'm really curious. Do you sleep?
I do. I actually get a lot of sleep. So this is a whole game in itself, right? Everything's a game. Like, when I sleep, I had this thing called the 8 sleep. It cools my bed. Okay. It also tracks, you know, it scores my sleep. It's called Eight Sleep, the number eight.
Eight. Okay. Eight Sleep. Yeah. Okay.
So you spell out Eight Sleep. I wear a ring when I go to bed. It's another tracker, right? So it shows how much REM sleep I'm getting, all that stuff. I have a silk sleep mask, feels amazing, you know? And then I tape my mouth as well, right? Because when you leave your mouth open, I used to have to wake up to use the restroom like 3 or 4 times a night. I have to drink a lot of water. Now when you tape your mouth, it's completely, I don't wake up to use the restroom anymore. I don't need to drink the water anymore. I actually just wake up when it's the morning. It's freaking perfect. And I get 30 more minutes of REM sleep doing that, right? So all these things add up to me having a good start to my next day, and it's worth it.
Do you have, this is such a common question, and I think it's such a common kind of Tim Ferriss question, but I'd love to throw it your way anyway. Do you have a set morning routine?
Yeah. I mean, the way I look at morning routines is these are a series of power-ups where I'm just like, dude, if I got started like this, I'm ready to crush my day. And so, you know, I'll give you the kind of the cliches, like, yes, meditation. I go for 10 to 30 minutes. I sit on my little chair over here. You can't see it right now, but I have a Peloton bike right in back of me. I do a body workout, and I fill out my journal in the morning too. Three things I'm grateful for, because I can't be angry if I'm doing that. Three things I'm going to do, one affirmation. And then I have my goals next to a post-it in my restroom, and I'll just stare at the goals as I'm brushing my teeth.
Yeah.
And my goals over here too. So I'm constantly, and by the way, I had this turtle next to me too. So it's constant like reinforcements and power-ups where I'm just like, I'm good to go, bring the pain.
Yeah. Eric, what do you do in your downtime? Like, do you have a time where, like, do you just kick back and be like, all right, cool, I'm just going to binge watch Netflix tonight, or I'm going to go sit on a beach with some classical music and stare at the water? Is there any aspect of your life that you're not trying to gamify or kind of up level?
I think even when I go on vacation, it's kind of like, okay, this is, you're going to rest right now, right? It's in a game. You need to rest. Sometimes you have to go like eat bread and drink water in the game. So I do it, but I find that being on the beach for too long starts to get really boring. So I do it like every quarter, maybe even 2-3 times a quarter, I am doing that.
Yeah.
And I think it's great. I think it's great to relax and disconnect. But I think what's good is, you know, for me, one second I can go read, the other second I can go create content, you know, then I can go talk to people like you, or I can go hang out in Clubhouse, right? There's just a lot that I can do, and I can keep switching around if I get bored.
Gotcha. And are you in a relationship, or are you interested in a relationship?
It's complicated right now. We'll just put it that way.
Okay. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
What are you excited about with your companies and with your businesses about moving forward? And I'm going to put an asterisk by that of how has COVID shifted what you do?
Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, I feel guilty saying this. And so you have a cohort of people that are saying COVID was amazing, and then the other half, COVID devastated my business. So for sure, I'm on the first side. COVID was great because we got to make the personnel changes we wanted to make. And then we really focused on, you know, our kind of long-term exponential sources of revenue. And it's been largely great. And now I'm just completely focused on just, you know, acquiring other businesses.
Wow. What do you look for in a business? I just want to talk about investing if we could really quick. What are you looking for? Is it the culture? Is it the lack of a culture? Or is it strictly like a P&L and some other numeric aspect that you're working through an equation?
Yeah. So I'll give you an example. So yes, the culture is probably top three, if not number one. But there's an agency we're trying to acquire that's doing, let's call it $8 million a year.
Okay.
And we're looking at it right now. We're like, okay, you know, who's on their team? Do they have great culture people, head of talent people, a great sales team? Like, what is their edge when it comes to talent? So talent's one big piece of it. Mm-hmm. And from within that talent, can they help our software? Can they help the agency? Can they actually help the events business? Like, we're looking for cross-pollination where 1 + 1 = 5 or 7. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't want it just to be like a cash transaction, right? Because the way I look at these acquisitions is, you know, if you buy the company, the company's got to pay for itself, right?
Right.
And then am I getting amazing executives as well? So I'm looking at all these things. How strong is their website? So there's a ton of aspects I'm looking at, and we have a checklist that we go down.
Gotcha. Tell me about what's next for you, man. I know you're on this whole tour. You're trying to get the book out. You're doing podcasts. What is like the big thing that you're looking forward to in the next, say, 6 months to a year?
Hiring amazing people.
That's all right, it. You guys.
I mean, the CEO's job is really, I shouldn't say CEO, but I mean, the main job of any leader is really, could be even a VP, is to recruit. It's to finance, just to make sure, you know, there's cash in the bank or we're raising money or whatever.
Sure.
And then it's the maintaining the vision, right? And then the VPs, their job is to be the steward of the vision. And then, you know, ultimately, you know, how do you keep doing that? It's just constant communication and focus on culture.
Gotcha. Eric, for people who are interested in any of these things that you do, that you sell, that you, or you personally, where else besides Clubhouse do you hang out, or where can people find you? Where can people get a hold of your book, first of all, and then where can people find you?
Super appreciate it. I mean, there's a whole game in itself to getting this domain, but levelingup.com. You can learn more about the book there, or you can just go to your favorite online retailer, and then you can follow me or just DM me on Instagram or Twitter at Eric OSIU.
Beautiful, brother. I really appreciate you coming on. I think people are going to need to listen to this multiple times and just be like, okay, I got to go back and rehear that. Okay, I got to go back and rehear that. So thank you for bringing so much value to my audience and just for your time, your attention, and what you're bringing out into the world, man. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, Traver.
This is Traver Boehm signing off on another episode of the Uncivilized Podcast. If you enjoyed this, please give us a share. Give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. And if you're interested in getting a hold of my book, Man Uncivilized, whether you're a man or a woman, please go to www.manuncivilized.com/the book and get reading.